Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The tax man cometh again, but this time it's high earners' tax bills under investigation. Is it worth transferring your personal pension? We look at the exit charges that can make all the difference. And 2 years on from the banking crisis, how easy is it to get a buy-to-let mortgage? All this to come on this week's FT Money Show. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Alice Ross.
Hello.
And Steve Lodge.
Hello.
And later we'll be joined by Tanya Poley. But we have as our special studio guest, Tom McPhail, Head of Pensions Research at Independent Advisors Hargreaves Lansdown.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news. This week, high earners were warned that HM Revenue and Customs is to mount a ruthless crackdown on morally indefensible tax avoidance and evasion. Not my words, but those of Chief Secretary to the Treasury, Danny Alexander. It will involve the tax authority's high net worth unit, which was initially set up to scrutinise just the 5,000 highest earners in the UK, broadening the scope of its investigation to include all 150,000 individuals who now pay the new 50 pence rate of tax on earnings of more than £150,000 a year. The aim is to recoup up to £7 billion. Alice, now this sounds like the language of a politician at a party conference, but what will the reality be for people who are on six-figure salaries?
Well, the reality is obviously that they will be scrutinised more closely now. A lot of people earning these kind of salaries are already taking some steps towards what they would call tax planning, what perhaps Danny Alexander would call more like tax avoidance. But it's a very grey area. So I've been speaking to private client wealth managers this week about what they intend to do about this, you know, what are the plans? And they say no detail has been given of what will be scrutinised exactly, just that they will be scrutinised. So people don't quite know what steps to take at the moment. But one thing that people are trying to do is use tax avoidance schemes more carefully. Now, this is a trend that's been going on for the past few years, ever since an anti-avoidance measure was set up by HMRC, and that was back in 2004. So since then, people have been a bit more careful on anything that could be deemed to be tax avoidance. And this is really ramping that up. So anything that looks a little bit dodgy, I think people are going to think twice about.
So what sorts of scheme, you know, might be coming under scrutiny, or certainly which sorts of schemes should people be a little bit careful with?
Well, the HMRC, usually it says it doesn't comment on specific schemes, but it actually has made 10 examples on its website, so 10 exceptions to that rule. And some of those are relatively mainstream. I mean, you have employee benefit trusts, which are used by high earners as an alternative to pensions. You also have an EFIRB scheme, employee funded retirement benefit schemes. Just one type of those at the moment. And these are also being looked at by high earners as an alternative to a pension scheme. And in fact, some people are saying that EFIRBs could become much more mainstream than they are now because of the separate government crackdown on pensions for high earners. So these things are quite mainstream. And there have been fears that other schemes could also come under this net. So QROPs, for example, overseas pension schemes, which are again used by high earners who might be retiring outside the UK. Some people are warning me that they think these could also come under scrutiny.
And these schemes have become, you know, obviously much more popular. Certainly people have become much more aware of them in the last few months and years as tax rates have gone up. Is it likely that that people will stop offering new versions of them until there's some clarity on what exactly HM Revenue Customs' position is on them?
New versions of the QROPs?
Any particular scheme that has tax advantages, you know, could we see a sort of suspension of them?
I doubt it, to be honest. I mean, people are always looking for ways around the tax regime, and these kind of schemes are being set up quite frequently. I mean, even recently with some offshore bond schemes, people have been introducing a new kind of segmenting scheme whereby you can encash some of your bonds and not others, and you can actually shift the growth of the bits of the bond that you didn't encash onto the bits of the bond that you did encash onto the bits that you didn't encash, and thereby, you know, avoid a bit of tax that way. And some people think that this looks pretty dodgy, so they're actually not even recommending those schemes.
Well, thanks for that, Alice. And for more on the status of EFIRBs, QROPs and any other tax-efficient acronyms, look out for Alice's story on the front of the FT Money section this weekend and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, is it getting easier or harder to get a buy-to-let mortgage? First, though, pension charges. While competition has been bringing down charges for some fund investments, personal pensions can still come at a hefty cost. Research by the FT magazine Money Management has found that charges on the most expensive personal pensions can reduce a projected pension fund by up to 40% over 25 years. But transferring in and out of a more flexible, self-invested personal pension, or SIP, can also come at a cost, as many charge entry fees, exit fees, initial and annual charges. Steve, you've been studying the different types and sort of layers of charging on SIPs. It looks as if competition isn't bringing costs down. Is that what you found?
Well, one particular move this week by Standard Life, the biggest SIP provider, does seem to fly in the face of what we have seen, which has been generally competition on SIP prices in the last few years. Standard Life from January is introducing a £750 exit charge, which will only hit new customers and only for the first year. But even so, it's aimed at stopping people leaving quickly. Now, they say the reason for this is that naughty financial advisors have been using their brilliant administration to pull all their pensions together and then swan off to someone else. So I think the picture's a bit murky on charges. Tom, you're a rival SIP provider, Hargreaves Lansdown. Where do you see the market? Are charges coming down generally, or are they? Does it depend on the type of plan?
I think the first thing is to put it into context. I mean, the 40% impact on the overall return. It's important to bear in mind that even the most cost efficient retail pensions, the kind of thing that an individual might go into, will reduce the overall return by 20 to 30% as a result of the charges. And it is inevitable that you're going to pay charges and they will have an impact on your return.
And the big numbers come from the compounding, of course.
Absolutely. And you just have to accept that as part of the deal. That you're paying for the trustees, for the management of the money, for the security of the money, and for the efficient management of the money. So you have to accept you're going to pay charges. But it is certainly true you have some control over how much you pay. I think the worst outcome is that you're paying the high charges and not getting the benefit of good quality investment management. And if that's the case, you'd have been better off just finding the cheapest possible pension you can, stick your money in a tracker fund, shut the box for 20 years and come back and see how much is in there. If you're going to pay the charges, make sure you're getting good quality for
it. And what about specifically SIPs? Because those are presumably taken out by people who do want to improve their investment performance. Where are the charges there now? Are they coming down, as I think some analysts say generally they are? Or is this, for example, this move by Standard Life? And I think they're also increasing their other charges by 4%, which doesn't sound like very much, but it's 10 quid a year or whatever, for all their existing customer base. What's happening generally? Have charges got as low as they're going to get?
It's still evolving. Now, over the last few years, we saw the charges come down quite rapidly as SIP providers such as Hargreaves Lansdown, Standard Life, AJ Bell and others pioneered these new low-cost SIPs. So there was a general downward movement in SIP charges. Good news for investors. I think they've levelled off to some degree. I think we will continue to see competition changing the market. I think the whole pension landscape is changing quite quickly, and that will have an effect on charges. I think it's worth mentioning that there's been work going on behind the scenes between the industry and the Financial Services Authority to come up with a set of approved standards on how the charges are disclosed. There's been disquiet in the past, the fact people are getting hit by charges they didn't know about. And to be fair to Standard Life, they're being quite upfront about this £750 charge if you leave. And I think that's very important, that you know what you're going to pay and when you're going to pay it when you first go into the SIP, so that you can make an informed decision about whether that SIP is good for you or meets your particular investment needs or not.
And should cynics, though, take a view on exit charges that's really about people who've grabbed the money already, wanting to hang on to it and stop investors moving to more competitive vehicles? I mean, your company has an exit charge, of course. Standard Life is introducing the £750 one, albeit first year. Many other firms have fees of a few hundred pounds to leave. And, of course, you're leaving typically in cash, so... Is it really justifiable?
Again, so, I mean, for example, if someone is looking to transfer out of Hargreaves Lansdown, we would charge a £75 administration fee. We try to keep the costs as low as we can to be a fair reflection of the costs involved. And again, I think it's back to that point that it has to be clear and upfront. And if you know going into it what you're going to pay and when you're going to pay it, then you can make an informed decision. And if you think that a £750 charge for going back out again in the first year is not an attractive proposition, then don't go in there in the first place.
Or, I guess, wait for day 366.
Or indeed wait and then leave.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Timing, yes, being important. Thanks for that. And for a full explanation of how these charges are applied and the table of who charges what, look out for Steve's feature in the FT Money section this weekend and on our website, ft.com/money. And finally today, buy-to-let mortgages. It's now 3 years since the onset of the credit crunch and 2 years since the banking crisis, but it seems that many lenders are still not keen on buy-to-let property. Last week, Lloyds Banking Group, one of the biggest buy-to-let lenders, introduced further restrictions for landlords, who will only be offered loans for up to 3 properties or £2 million worth of lending. Borrowers are currently able to take out up to 9 mortgages with a total value of up to £3 million across all of the group's brands. So, with house prices now falling across the country, are the remaining buy-to-let lenders likely to slam the door on would-be borrowers? Tanya joins us now. You covered the Lloyds restriction last week, which is coming into force on
close of business Friday.
Close of business Friday this week. Yep. So that is now a reality for buy-to-let borrowers. What about other lenders?
Well, it's actually quite interesting because at the moment, what we've seen is it's been Lloyds Banking Group, which kind of consists of like BM Solutions, is their kind of main specialist buy-to-let brand. And then it's the Mortgage Works, which is part of the Nationwide Building Society. Actually, last year, they did about 80% of all new buy-to-let business. So they've been the main two players. And while Lloyds has made this move of kind of, you know, obviously they want to limit their exposure to the buy-to-let market with this new change, we've actually seen the Mortgage Works being a bit more aggressive in the market. They've in May, they actually increased their maximum loan-to-value from 70% to 80%, which is a fairly big move at the moment for buy-to-let products, really. And they've also, over the last sort of couple of months, they've been reducing their rates quite a bit. And I actually spoke to the Mortgage Works the other day, and they confirmed that they were very committed to the buy-to-let market. And a lot of mortgage brokers seem to think that they are ramping up their lending because they want to take a bit of a share of this market, because actually they're getting quite good margins on buy-to-let rates at the moment.
So why are other lenders turning their backs on good margins? You wouldn't think that they'd do that at a time when they're trying to improve their margins generally.
Yeah, I think with Lloyds... They were probably the biggest buy-to-let lender. I mean, the Mortgage Works obviously has started to take a lot more share. But prior to the credit crunch, they were obviously doing a lot of business, and they're probably of the position now where they think they're probably overweight in buy-to-let lending. And obviously, with house price falls, they're probably slightly concerned that, you know, they could see some like increase in arrears, and they're probably just sort of taking a step back, just be like, you know, we'll see how the market goes. I mean, they claim actually it won't affect their customers that much, because they claim that majority of their, I think 9 out of 10 of their customers actually don't have free properties. So they seem to say that actually, you know, it won't really affect hardly anyone.
Yeah, this is very much directed at the sort of semi-professional landlords.
Semi-professionals, yes, yeah. I mean, I think it is a fairly significant change though, because for those with a larger buy-to-let portfolio and those that have kind of higher value properties, they're going to find that, you know, BM Solutions, which is one of the biggest lenders and probably one of the most competitive rates, they're not actually going to be able to remortgage any of their existing loans with them. So say if they have like maybe 5 properties currently, which is okay within their rules, they'll have to remortgage to either the Mortgage Works or one of the other sort of main high street lenders. And while the mortgage works will be fine. I think you've got to also look at all the other high street lenders, because a lot of them have their maximum limits as well. So you may find that you kind of have to go from one lender to the next lender and then sort of using up your maximum limits. And also some of these lenders aren't going to have the most competitive rates. Mortgage brokers seem to say that you could possibly look at private banks or commercial lenders. So private banks they don't seem to have a limit on the number of properties they'll sort of have within a portfolio. Obviously, you've got to be the right kind of client for them. Commercial lenders are good in terms of they often offer similar terms and conditions. But there are a couple of drawbacks. I think they actually insist on having the loan based on a capital and repayment basis, not interest only. And most buy-to-let brokers tend to prefer interest only. So it's worth just checking out what's around in the rest of the market. And also, one thing to note out for some of the high street lenders do have a maximum limit, which they actually, it's not just to do with their how many properties they'll let you, but also how many properties you've got with other lenders. So that's what you've also got to watch out for.
So it's the whole portfolio that will be looked at. Thanks, Tanya. And for more on lenders' restrictions on buy-to-let mortgages, you can read her article in the Money section of this weekend's FT. But that's all we have time for in this week's FT Money Show. Remember, you'll find weekday news updates and all of these stories on our website, ft.com/money. And if you have a question you'd like us to answer about any aspect of your finances, just email us. The address is money@ft.com. Next week, we'll bring you another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Tanya, Steve, and our special studio guest, Tom McPhail from Hargreaves Lansdown.
Goodbye. Bye.